welcome to the Blazers Edge podcast. I'm Tara, and today Joe is in Arizona watching baseball. But I am not alone. I am so happy to be joined by friendly neighborhood sports writer Dane Carbaugh. Dane is an NBA writer for NBC Sports. You can also find his work on his YouTube channel, Dane Not Dan. And these videos, a lot of these videos also appear on BlazersEdge.com. And if you ask me, he's also really fun to follow on Twitter if you are into that kind of thing. Welcome to the show, Dane.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, thanks for having me on. Thanks for the kind words.
Now, Dane, you're a native Oregonian, and here on the Fanalist edition of the Blazers Edge podcast, we like to get to know our guests before we delve into the analysis. So let me ask you, as a native Oregonian, did you grow up a Blazer fan?
It depends on what you mean by grow up. You know, I think when I was a little kid, like grade school, I wasn't actually a Blazer fan. So I don't really have a big connection. I've read about this before, but I don't really have a big connection to, you know, the Drexler era Blazers or anything. So my era was really was right, you know, pre-Jailblazers, really just you know, those the early 2000s or, you know, right at the turn of the century teams. Those are those the Scottie Pippen, Rasheed Wallace teams before Quintel Woods started beating dogs and stuff, you know. So that was really my my introduction to the Blazers. So it took me a little while.
Sure, sure. Now, as a journalist, were you, you know, a journalist who found your niche in sports writing, or were you a longtime sports fan who wanted to learn how to write more about it and become a journalist in that field?
Oh, man, that's a good question. No, I didn't specialize in sports at all. In fact, I didn't even go to school for journalism. I just ended up sort of in this field by accident. And I certainly did force my way into sports, that's for sure. I definitely spent I can admit now I spent some time, as most of us do, most of us sports writers do, came from this route, is spent some time at the job that I was at doing the job that I wasn't supposed to be doing, which is sports writing, sort of on the clock at times. So in order to
relate to that.
Yeah, none of us can relate to that. That's never happened before. So, but sure, you know, I definitely sort of forced my way in. The first thing I really ever covered as a sports journalist was Sabonis's retirement ceremony up in Pioneer Square.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, so it hasn't really been too long of a time, but that's certainly something that I, you know, kind of wedged my way into, and I don't know, sometime later, here I am.
I want to hear more about the Sabonis retirement. It was at Pioneer Square?
Yeah, it was cool. It was his Hall of Fame thing. That's what it was. It was his Hall of Fame thing. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's 2011 or 2012, one of those two years. But it was cool. Yeah, it was, you know, everybody was there. Brian Grant was there. Chris Dudley was there. It was a big thing. I interviewed the Mics, of course, and I took a bunch of photos, and that ended up appearing at Dime Magazine.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
Well, that's awesome. Well, bring us back to the present. We'll talk a little bit about the Blazers because, after all, we are BlazersEdge.com. And I know that you probably watch tons of games all over the league, so it's probably hard for you to concentrate on any one team at a time. Is that pretty much a fair assessment?
I don't know. I think I concentrate the hardest in the Blazers just because I watch them the most in the off time. But obviously, yeah, when the Blazers aren't playing, pretty much basketball is constantly on. So I think I consider myself, I have a weird space that I haven't really thought it through. It's like, I don't consider myself obviously a beat person for the Blazers or anything, but I think a lot of folks around the league, like Sean Hyken is, you know, he watches the Bulls, you know, he is a beat reporter for the Bulls, but he also watches so much NBA, it's hard to call him just a Bulls person. I kind of say I'm like that with the Blazers, and obviously I have a full-time league-wide job, so I don't know.
Well, I've found so much of your work that you do, especially on the videos that are about the Trailblazers, really useful for me for understanding like what's going on. And yeah. Also, you know, everything about the other teams I also find really helpful. But to get back to the Blazers, pretty much since the All-Star break, there's been one main topic on everybody's mind, and that is the emergence of Yusuf Nurkic and what he means to this team. Just to maybe kind of concentrate on the most recent games, just to bring us all back up to speed, is that a couple games ago, the Trailblazers played the Milwaukee Bucks. They lost that game 93-90. I have to tell you, that was a kind of a painful game to watch for me. I don't know what they ate right before the game, because their fingers were dropping everything. They were definitely not coming off their peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, because they did not have sticky fingers. They were like dropping the ball everywhere. Damian Lillard did his best to make a game of it at the end after all those turnovers in the first half, but the Blazers ultimately lost to the Bucks 93-90. And then we had the win over the Knicks 110-95, which, again, I'm never comfortable in those games where we hold a lead. I was like, if we get up by 40, I'll be feeling okay. But you just never know with this team what is going to happen, and it doesn't matter what team they're playing.
Yeah, especially typical for this year.
I know. Well, it feels like to me for the last several years even. I mean, there was a time where I became a Trailblazer fan during the Terry Porter and Clyde Drexler days. And there was a time where, you know, there could be 10 minutes left in the game and the team would be down by 20. It'd be like, oh, that's no problem. Plenty of time. We can come back. Doesn't feel quite that way these days. And sometimes when you have a 10-point lead, it doesn't feel comfortable nearly enough. But anyway, since the All-Star break, Nurkic has been the big story. So, you know, my question is, let's talk about Nurkic in a minute. But aside from Nurkic, is there anything that's really stood out to you about the Blazers' play in general since the All-Star break?
I mean, it's hard to compartmentalize those things, I think, from Nurkic, just because it's not just about, you know, as we saw, the Blazers, who had a valuable team center in Robin Lopez before. It's not just about the statistics that he's compiling himself. It's about the actions that he's taking on the floor. It's about the space that he's occupying. It's about the big men that he's distracting, essentially, or locking up with in order for somebody else to get a rebound. It's about a lot of the other things that he does as part of the five-man unit. So I don't know if I can completely compartmentalize it. I certainly think that Damian has looked more confident. I think we talked about it a little bit earlier. I know Holdall mentioned it. I think it was pretty apparent that it looked like he's just having a hard time coming off of that foot 100%. Damian really started, I think, to force it this year. And I noted this on Twitter, but the thing that I was kind of interesting was he got rid of the whole, if you remember about 2 years ago, 2 years ago was probably his peak of it. But he would try to pack it all the time, and he'd have a bunch of missed dunks where it's like, mm-hmm. You know, he's trying to give yourself an exclamation point and, you know, use some motion to get the game going a little bit. He stopped trying to do that. Now he's been a lot craftier around the basket this year, a lot more up and under layups, a lot more. He's holding the ball for another dribble, essentially, underneath the basket, which is great. But he also has started to force it more. So his forcing has moved from dunks into these weird sort of fall away shots at 3 feet where he thinks he's going to get a foul, and he's just not doing enough to get him. So that's sort of really, and I think also he's had some explosivity issues. So I don't know. I feel like Damian looks a little better. Jason Quick's article on CSN and W was talked about, although there wasn't any clarity in terms of like right. What it was that Damian did to get right. So it's like, okay, it could have just been a tweet, I suppose. And the full story didn't really add anything to it, but
I know they talked about it like on Sunday night, and he was like, it's coming out on Monday. And I was like, so excited on Monday. I was waiting for the article. Mm-hmm. Like what was wrong with Dame? And it was like,
right.
Oh, there was something wrong, but we're not going to talk about it. And he's fine.
Yeah.
Oh
well, yeah. Sort of weird story, but I mean, he did something maybe, I sure. Don't know, maybe he set himself right. We just don't know what it is. So I would say Damian looks a lot better. That'd be my opinion of it. I think, the rest of the guys are still sort of playing how the rest of the guys have played the rest of the season. Aminu is back into his form of being a good defender, but he can't dribble or shoot the basketball basically at all. I think that I wonder if people are, I've wondered that a little bit, but I wonder if people are maybe a little disappointed in Mo. Just because he's been a useful three-point shooter and a useful part of the starting lineup for long stretches of the season, but maybe there was this weird expectation of, I certainly didn't expect it, but a expectation of another jump after last season.
Sure.
So, if he was 8% better, sort of across the board on what he does best, like that would make a huge difference for this team. So, and you know, it's certainly the guy is super young, and obviously I think that he will make that expansion in seasons to come. But so I think, you know, I think Damian's been a little bit better outside of Nurkic. Now add Nurkic in the mix and you have a whole different story.
Right. Yeah. And let's move into that. Your video talked about some of the things that Nurkic is doing. He's creating gravity, which is pulling people towards him, which is clearing out more space for other players to do more. He's making his jump shot with regularity. He's passing more than we expected that he would be doing. My biggest question about this is it sustainable? Is the play that you're seeing, is this all stuff that you think that he could continue to do? Or is it a result of he came here and he's like trying to show us everything all at once?
Right. Yeah. The way I put it was, is this my wonder if this is a first date situation where you're a little bit different from the person that you are because you're trying to impress the other person that first date. That's from a talent perspective. Yeah. I think it's probably sustainable, if not expandable, but the real question is whether the attitude stays the same. I think, you know, his ending attitude in Denver was indicative of something that had been going on for him, you know, sort of the whole time he was there. People around the league have told me that. I don't think it's any kind of secret or anything that, you know, when he gets down, he can be down. I mean, he asked to be put on the bench so he didn't have to play with Jokic and, like, you know, he had a bad attitude. So if this team experiences a dip, and the way that that's possible is, I hate to say it, but the way that's possible is if Damian or CJ gets hurt for an extended period of time next season, right?
Knock on wood.
But if that happens, this team will probably take, you know, they won't take the step out of this season. They'll stay where they're at or maybe be a little bit worse. And so is he still going to be the guy that everyone wants him to be that he's been so far, or is he going to be a little mopey when they lose six games in a row? You know, I don't know.
Right.
So that is a real question. I think there's enough evidence for his career and you know, from folks in Denver just says that's entirely possible. So I think from a talent perspective, yes, it's definitely possible he keeps this up. And like, I mean, would be another great steal for O'Shea if that's what happens, but
for sure
there's cause for some concern for Blazers fans.
So you want to speak specific for people who maybe haven't seen your video yet, you want to speak specifically about some of the things that you are seeing that he is doing right, that he brings to this team that the team didn't have before?
Yeah, I think he's a better screener than Mason Plumlee, first of all, even though Mason Plumlee was a very good screener. But part of that is also gravity, because when he screens, teams still have to stunt over to him or recover back to him in time, because he can shoot to wherever if he fades, you know, he can shoot from wherever he fades to.
So when you say that you think he's a better screener than Mason Plumlee was, do you think it's his timing that's better? Is it his actual body position that you think is an improvement, or just like his sheer size? What are some of the things that make his screens more effective than any, you know, just than your average screener?
I think the difference between him and Mason is actually just what I was about to get to, is the gravity portion of it. I think they both have excellent timing. I mean, Mason played with Damian for so long. They had such a good relationship on that pick and roll that, you know, he made it happen. Mason is obviously a big body and just had a set of screen, best screen setter on the team until he left. So, we're sort of splitting hairs a little bit. There's not a huge difference, but it's more useful, I think, for the Blazers, because Nurkic can fade. And when he fades, the defense has to take, even if it's a half step back towards him, out towards the elbow, versus following Damian on the drive. That's what makes a difference in the NBA. I mean, if you've ever...
It's a game of inches a lot of times.
It is a game of inches. I mean, really, if you've ever gone down to an NBA basketball court and stood on it and then stood next to a real basketball player, it's like there's almost no space to pass the ball. It feels crazy as like a normal sized human being. It's like, oh, this is impossible. This is, you know, the scale is really wacky. So we are talking about, you know, just shaving off little shavings here. So I think that's an important difference. Mostly what the video talked about was that he is a shooter. And that is important for the Blazers' offense, mostly because, and I think that's been not, again, not to sort of make Aminu, you know, sort of call him out a little bit, but because Aminu can't shoot the basketball at all this year, that makes it so that both of the posts for the Blazers couldn't shoot the ball, and that really just made it a lot easier for defenses to key off of Damian and CJ. Mm-hmm. So because that rotation, like last year they were hoping that Aminu would make or miss that three-point shot, and so teams blitz Damian and CJ. Teams haven't had to do that at all this season, and that was really what shut the Blazers down last season, was teams blitzing Damian and CJ with their big man off the big and roll. But that's because the initial part of a blitz, which is where two players, big man and the guard man, come up off of the screen and they just go after the dribbler, mm-hmm. and leave the big man alone, in that case would be Plumlee, they can leave Plumlee open. They can't leave Nurkic open basically at all now, because they mm-hmm. don't want to risk that shot, and because he's a good passer from that position off of the screen and fade, then you leave yourself open to possibly an easy bucket if you then slide over and try to help. So I think that's an important part of what he's bringing. It's his ability to shoot and the things that can cascade down off of that. So, yes, screening is good. Yes, obviously he's a good rebounder. He's a big body. He has a really good timing on his blocks. And he, you know, he has had some upticks in what he's been doing. Like he's assisting more frequently for the Blazers, and he's obviously boosted his assist totals. That's something that we saw Mason Plumlee do. It's I think the conversation has been really funny around locally, but also nationally. It's funny to see people say, Nurkic, well, he's not quite the same passer that Plumlee is, and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. But it's like Plumlee was not thought of as a passer when he came to Portland. Like, he was a guy who, like, got layups for the Nets. You know, it's like he tripled his assist rate from the time he came to the Blazers to the time he left. So it's like he wasn't some stellar, you know, high post passer. And I think Nurkic is going to be afforded a lot of the same opportunities. Mm-hmm. He has the same players around him that Plumlee did. He has the same system that Plumlee did. He has the same coach that Plumlee did, who's going to utilize him, I think, in similar ways you've already seen from that high post passing position. So I think that Nurkic has potentially an ability to expand upon his passing. So I think all those things put together, the passing, the block shots, the occupying space, the ability on the screen and roll to take up gravity, and also the ability that he can go down low as a single post-up player and draw gravity that way. All those things change. None of those things are just for him. All those things change how the rest of the team interacts with him, and, of course, how the defense interacts with him.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about a couple of things to piggyback off of that. So I want to put a pin in the fact, remind me that I'm going to ask you about Vonleh. But before we go to Vonleh, I want to ask you, there's a couple things that Nurkic does that make me kind of nervous. And I'm not sure if there are things that I'm just not used to because I haven't seen from a center before or in a really long time. So I'm wondering what you think about these things. One thing that I've noticed Nurkic is doing a lot more than we've seen in a long time is that he's palming the ball and holding it way out there and swinging it all around. And like, that's definitely a style that he has that we did not, I don't think, see before with Plumlee. And that makes me super nervous because he's got the ball like just hanging out there. But, you know, but people say, you know, don't worry about that. His hands are big enough to do that. You know, talk about that play. Talk me down off this one. This makes me really nervous. And every time he does it, I'm like, but people tell me I shouldn't worry. So talk me down off of this one.
Oh, no, I wouldn't worry about that. His, you know, it really is where he comes up with issues in terms of passing the ball, holding the ball. Is really I don't call it sloppiness. It's more recklessness than anything else. He thinks he can put it into certain spaces that don't really work. He thinks that he can move faster than he can. He sees the play a little bit, I think, and then accelerates it in his brain and then makes the pass before it's really ready to be made. But I think it's like those are sort of some of the things that he comes up in. Maybe does look a little bit like we talked about being, he's being a little bit of a first date type of dude. You know, it's like, oh, watch this pass. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't think his holding the ball out like that is any dangerous. I haven't seen a lot of, I mean, he hasn't had a lot of turnovers over guys tipping the ball out of his hands. If that was the case, it'd be like, okay, stop holding it with one hand.
His turnovers are more of a result of his passing it into somebody. Is that
what? Yeah, I would say that, or sometimes wacky post moves.
Uh huh. Oh yeah, sometimes like he's dribbling the ball and then suddenly he's just not dribbling it anymore.
Yeah,
and I've seen that happen.
Yeah, weird flips and pivots that are unnecessary, or yeah.
Yeah, I call it sometimes a casual play where it's like I'm going to make this pass, but I haven't quite thought it all the way through. And I see him making passes into really tight spaces, and sometimes those get knocked out. And I don't know if that's a factor of that he used to have more space when he was in Denver, because you know there were other big men that were allowing more space for making those tiny passes, or if that's just something else I'm going to have to learn how to live with. And just like, you know, Evan Turner does it too. Sometimes they thread it through these tiny little areas where you're just like, oh, that's not going to go. Okay, it did this time. Is that something I need to worry about?
I don't know. With Nurkic, I feel like it's not. There's so much benefit that comes out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And his angles are.
Reward.
He puts them in a position where it's also a little more structured, those passes from where he is. Because a lot of time, those passes for him versus instead of Evan Turner are, you know, he's at the high post, he's playing an angle, and that. If you drew up a play that way, or as an option, one of the options on a set like that, you wouldn't be that surprised. As opposed to Evan Turner does a lot of times in transition or in secondary transition, where it's like, what are you doing? You could just wait. Like, yeah, that guy was maybe open backdoor, but also you have 20 seconds left on the shot clock.
And yeah, so Evan Turner's more freestyling, and and Nurkic is doing a play, and it happens to be that people are closing in real tight, and he only has a split second to make it. But it's not something that he's just trying to like make up on the spot.
I think Nurkic just look more crisp to me. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. how I'd put it too.
Well, one of the things that I've really enjoyed watching is Nurkic and Vonleh together. I've always liked Vonleh because of his incredible physique, which I just think is just he's so ready for the NBA in terms of the way he's built. And I didn't really have a problem with him starting last year because I understood what was going on. You know, give him a chance to play against the best players to make him, you know, good as fast as you can. I mean, that made sense to me. But I see since the All-Star break with Nurkic, I think I'm seeing real progress. At first, when they played together, I felt like they were kind of like on top of each other all the time and like sort of trying to occupy the same space, which is something I felt happened a lot last year when Noah Vonleh would play with like Ed Davis, and they'd both show up in the same place to try to do the same thing. But to me, it looks like that is starting to resolve itself, and that Vonleh and Nurkic are really playing together and playing off of each other. Is that something that that you see as well?
Yeah, and it happens in layers, and it's such an interesting. This has been talked about a little bit. I think it's such an interesting part of the NBA and a good way to think about analysis of team construction, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, Mason Plumlee, I think he and Vonleh did occupy a lot of the same space, or because of the way Terry Stotts' offense worked, Vonleh had to be, if Plumlee was in, Vonleh had to be out, and Vonleh often didn't look comfortable playing in those situations. So they do operate better together. Now, he's had some very good games. Now, the flip side of that is that if you would watch Vonleh, say, just for let's say 8 seconds of a possession, certain possessions, whether he has the ball or not, or whether he's defending or not, or defending the ball or not, I should say, I wouldn't say that. That's sort of I don't want to say a disappointment, but it's certainly been something to note, is that there hasn't been this huge leap as you would have expected, especially after all that playing time and the playing time he's getting this season, that there wasn't a huge jump for a certain, you know, if you just look at, say, how stilted some of his post moves are.
Okay.
Or how predictable some of them are. You know, like NBA veterans are like, yeah, you're going to go double fake back shoulder. You're going to go back to the hook. And it's like, I can see that. I can see that from a mile away as a writer, much less the guy who's a 10-year NBA veteran guarding him. Mm-hmm. So I think that there are still some issues to be worked out with Vonleh. I'm not sure that I see him individually as a player developing so much. What I see more is that Nurkic is affording him more opportunities to be able to play, both in spacing on offense and so not only his passing down to him, the interactivity between them, but also because guys cannot, if you think about it, and related to Vonleh, sort of, let's talk about his own, you know, his predictable post game, mm-hmm. is if you have a guy like Nurkic on the right elbow, and you have Vonleh on the left block, and Vonleh has the ball, and there's 12 seconds left in the shot clock, Vonleh starts dribbling the basketball, mm-hmm. and you are Mason Plumlee's defender, you know that Vonleh probably isn't giving the ball up with 12 seconds left. Mm-hmm. He thinks he has to get a shot up now because you're off with the shot clock. And he also, you know, he's like trying to get better at that. So he's just going to go through his sort of, again, like he sort of has these repeatable, predictable steps of his post game.
Okay.
So if you're Mason Plumlee's defender, there's no chance that Mason Plumlee hurts you on this play. He's not going to cut to the basketball or to the hoop. You know, Vonleh wouldn't alley-oop it to him or anything. And if you pass it out to him, he's not going to shoot the ball because then there'd be 4 seconds left in the shot clock and he can't shoot from anywhere.
Mm-hmm. So now you have Nurkic in there and you have to pay attention to him.
Right. And so, but that's the thing is that you have an extra half step or full step, or let's say you have an extra half dribble or full dribble of Vonleh's post up with which to work because you can't, because if help comes earlier off of Mason Plumlee's defender, I think, if Noah Vonleh is backing down the basketball. So I think that's a little bit of a nugget of the interactivity between them and how that changes their game together. So I think that they are playing better together. Vonleh is playing well. And, you know, Vonleh is a tenacious defender. He's a huge human being. If you haven't stood next to Noah Vonleh, I would think that, and I've heard this from many other writers who have been around NBA players, right? Like Noah Vonleh is somehow still remarkable in that aspect. And you are correct in that he's built for the NBA and that he has huge legs, which is super important for his position and also makes him feel gigantic.
Right.
So Noah Vonleh definitely is built for the NBA, and he is a, you know, he wants to rebound hard, which is perfect because Nurkic is good at boxing out for other people occupying space. I think that Mason Plumlee was certainly tried at that very hard. And I think that he was a smart rebounder and a smart team rebounder. But I think that Nurkic is better at it. I think he's better at occupying guys' space because nobody can move Nurkic out of the way. Nobody. So it's impossible to get past him in any way. You can't make, again, if we're talking about a game of inches, it's impossible. Even if you move the guy 8 inches off or 6 inches off of his base, like you could with Mason Plumlee sometimes, that changes how the team rebounding possession happens. You can't do that. Then it's a little bit easier for guys like Vonleh. You have Harkless crashing hard, Minu crashing hard. You know, it's harder. It's easier for the Blazers to get those rebounds. So I think Vonleh has looked a little bit better in that respect, or to get, you know, secondary offensive possessions, Vonleh putbacks, that kind of stuff. So
you're thinking for the most part, Vonleh is looking better. You're not seeing necessarily that he's getting a ton better, but he is looking better, and he is taking advantage, not in a bad way, but he is taking advantage of the opportunities that are afforded to him because of the presence of Nurkic now. Maybe we're not seeing giant strides, but we're seeing him doing what he should be doing. I guess my question would be, like, what's the next step for him, like, that you would like to see by the end of the year from him? If he really is going to show us some improvement, like, what would that look like by the end of the year, do you think? We only have a few games left, but...
Well, and I want to clarify, that's not a negative on Vonleh. That's not a negative assessment of it. It's like the result is still good, uh-huh. and the game, they're winning the games.
Sure.
So I'm fine with that. If we're talking about, you know, Neil's whole thing with Noah Vonleh is this guy is going to be a starter in 3 years. It's not a starter. Like, almost
well,
an all-star
fast.
Level, an all-star level type of player. You know, like I think he's going to be like a top guy in the league kind of guy.
Okay.
Like in a while. So that's Neil's whole thing. He wants Noah Vonleh to be the guy.
He says that about a lot of players.
Yeah, but he also made Terry play him like 40 games to start last year when he was bad. So, mm-hmm. I think it depends on who you're talking to, but in any case, so that's not supposed to be a knock on Vonleh at all. That being said, personally, if I'm looking at him, you know, I don't know what the Blazers specifically want, but what I would like for him is to use his physical tools on defense in a more sound way. I want him to be less jumpy on his feet. I want him to move his arms less. I want him to make the, you know, it took Myers Leonard 3 years to not jump at stuff, to not close his arms down, to not cross his arms. And, you know, we saw last year, Myers Leonard, before his injury, finally started, like, contesting where he used verticality and fade back with a player. Now, that doesn't mean, I mean, I don't know if his foul rating went down or not, but the point is, like, you could see the training over time with Myers Leonard with those things. So, Noah Vonleh, who is, you know, a better, more solid player in terms of just straight up being hard to move in the post, if he could add those things to his game, I think he would be better. And he kind of has that same kind of jitteriness to him, you know? He can get a little happy feet. He doesn't know where to pass it sometimes. You can see like a little moment of panic because he wants to make the right decision. So I think that is, as we've seen with Myers, I think is just like so hard to coach out of a player. It's so hard to coach out of a player. So individually, by the end of the game, I'd like to see him be a little less... a little more grounded on defense. Let's call it that.
Okay. But yeah, I like you said, with his body is just, you know, to be able to set him in the paint and have people move around him. And hopefully he'll get to a point where he creates gravity. He pulls people in the same way that Nurkic does. And what's been interesting now, we've learned recently that Myers has been playing through a lot of pain, and that's why he hasn't had a lot of time out on the floor. We've got Ed Davis out with a shoulder injury. And so as a result, we've had several games lately where I've noticed we've had Vonleh in there playing center, playing just straight up backup center. You think this is just a temporary thing while our centers heal, or do you think that it's a way that Vonleh could go?
I don't know. I mean, I think eventually they'd like, you know, by the end of Aminu's contract, they'd like Noah to be the full-time starting power forward with no ifs, ands, or buts. But I don't know if that's going to happen. So it certainly is. I mean, he's played some time there obviously before. So it's not like out of the question. I don't know if that's something that they're like, oh, we're jonesing to make him our second guy to like get him minutes. I don't know. It's possible to getting minutes. I mean, you know, his rookie season in Charlotte, he played the majority of his time at center, actually. And this year he's played, you know, a quarter of his time at center. So, I don't know. I don't know if it's a goal.
It's a lineup I've noticed lately, especially because I was wondering why Myers wasn't playing. And then to learn that, I was like, oh, okay. And it's funny because it's a lineup where you're like, oh, are we playing small ball now? And then is this working? And sometimes it, like, you know, for minutes at a time, it's like, oh, this is kind of exciting. That's when Aminu was making his shots. But then there's other times where you're like, maybe it's time to bring the starters back in.
Yeah, Terry's definitely in that mode where he has to. Is this where I think that's come up again? It's like, is this a lineup they're going to use now? And it's like, it's a lineup. Just throw it at the wall and see if it sticks. That's where Terry is right now.
Yeah, so. I think this is a fun time of year because of that. I enjoy that. Where
I don't know that he would call it that.
That he wouldn't call it what? Fun?
I don't know that he would call it fun, but yeah.
It is what it is, right? When you're a Blazer fan, you got to find, sometimes you have to find find the joy in the little things, let's just say. I want to ask you one more thing about the current, the recent play of the Blazers. And that is, we're trying to incorporating Evan Turner back in the lineup. In my eyes, it looks like it's been a little rough trying to get him back in there. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think obviously he's had some issues. That's a constant topic of conversation on the broadcast. Is he's had some issues with his hand brace. He's swapped it, what, three times now?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I can't imagine trying to play with a hand brace. It would.
Yeah. Especially in your shooting hand. I mean, I can't even imagine doing that.
Well, I mean, if it's his dominant hand. So, like, you know, for Evan Turner, it's like his whole thing. I mean, he's not a good shooter. So, Yeah, so you're making his shot worse, which it has, but also it makes him a less effective passer and a less effective dribbler. Two of the main things that he's, you know, he is the relief for Damian and CJ. So he's not as good at those things. He's not as confident where he can take the ball. You know, like he's not on a string anymore. Then that makes it a lot harder. You know, he's in four games back. He's shot 27% from the field. He only has a 1.3 assists a game. Not that great. So yeah, it looked rough. I think that, you know, Evan Turner, for as much as he had been reintegrated into that offense before, that offense is now different with Nurkic playing instead of Plumlee. So, and he still has this weird hand brace on. So I don't know what to expect, where it goes. I'm not seeing it as a huge hindrance at the moment. So I'm not worried about it. I mean, the Blazers are still winning. So if I was a Blazers fan, I wouldn't be worried about them. You know, like, as good as Denver's been, like, it's still a chase for the end of the to the end of the season. So it might get there. It might be fun.
So what do you think? Speaking of Denver, what do you think is gonna be the key, like, to the Blazers winning the game on Tuesday? Because that is looking more and more important all the time. It's gonna be a fantastic game, hopefully. What's gonna be what are gonna be the storylines? What's gonna be the key to the Blazers walking away with the win on that
one? I mean, Terry's been battling this entire time in Portland, but transition defense is going to be key. You know, Denver is allowing, you know, teams, they're allowing teams other than the Suns and the Lakers, they're allowing the most opponent points a game. I mean, they're in the Western Conference. So it's like, it's not like they're, you know, rocking people on the defensive side of the floor. So the Blazers shouldn't have a problem there. It's more going to be about the Blazers making sure they're getting out, making sure they're stopping that attack from Denver, which is, again, going to be, I think, that's a real question. That's a real question for the Blazers. So I think that they probably have their video crew working hard to figure out, again, it's game of inches. They have their video crew working hard to figure out what they can do specifically, who they can target, and who they can sort of coach up to say, hey, look, you know, this game, I really need Aminu. I really need you to be the press breaker on this, or whatever they're going to do with it.
I'm so worried about everything else besides the game of basketball taking over that game, that, like, the emotions of Nurkic are, I mean, the players are professional. They're not going to, you'd think that's not going to happen, but all of the hype leading up to it in the fans, I think people are just going to be real curious about what that's going to be like with him facing his, you know, facing the team that he, you know, was so glad to leave. I'm so worried that that's going to take over and we're not going to see the quality basketball that it could be.
Yeah, those games do feel like at times that they either go one of two ways. It's either some sort of revenge thing, like, mm-hmm. You know, IT against the Suns or something, or it ends up being just this disaster where they score like 8 points and go, you know, 3 of 12 from the field or something. So,
yeah, hard to know what it's going to be like that. Well, I want to pivot and talk about something else, unless you have anything else you want to add about what you've seen about the Blazers lately.
No, I think, I think I said this a while back on my own podcast or something. I don't know.
You're on a lot of podcasts.
I'm on too many, let's be honest.
I was listening to Between Me and You. Is that the
yep.
one?
Yeah, that's what I have with my buddy in Portland.
I loved your discussion about analytics the other day, but we're not going to get into that. We don't have time.
I was going to say that I think, as somebody, I feel like, you know, I essentially cover the team for Twitter. So that's sort of how I would put it. and so I end up having to watch every single game, whether I like it or not, I feel like, with the Blazers. And, man, it was a drag. So I'm happy for Blazers fans that their team, whether or not they make the playoffs or not, is going to be fun for the last, you know, 20 games of the year. Mm-hmm. So good for you guys.
Yeah, December, January, that was pretty rough. But we stuck with it. We're going to get some rewards at the end.
Hopefully.
Do you think, like, 1 to 100, what are the chances that Blazers are going to make the playoffs? Just your best guess.
Not going to like it.
I don't care. I'm fine either way. Like,
100 is the most. If 100 is the most, I'm going to say 40 or 38. Say 38.
38% that they will make it to the playoffs.
50-50 would be if they were within a half game of the mm-hmm. Nuggets or something, and so that switch can happen in a night. But they're a game and a half out now. And
it's hard.
It's hard. Then that's the problem. I said this back at the All-Star break, but for, say, the Spurs to catch the Warriors, or, I mean, I can't believe the Celtics are only a game back of Cleveland, but for elite teams, because elite teams don't lose many games, it's hard to make up a game and a half or two games from players. It's also hard to make up a game and a half when you lose the majority of your games, like the Nuggets and the Blazers. So it's because it's hard to predict, and it's also hard to make up that ground because you'd have to go on a streak that would be completely abnormal for your season, you know, winning percentage. So it's going to be weird to be a chase for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I like the fact that it makes it exciting. I personally am okay either way. You know, I love more basketball, but I also understand the benefits of not going in and getting, you know, pounded on or whatever. Either way, I'm happy with it. So my final stuff that I wanted to talk to you about, is I've mentioned how much I enjoy your Dane Not Dan videos. And one of the things I really like about them is because you have these two series, you have the playbook and you have the glossary. And with the playbook, you break down like specific plays, like this is what horns is, you know, this is ice, you know, things that people who talk about basketball a lot drop in conversation all the time. But maybe people like me who are kind of late coming to the, you know, actual game portion of it, like I never knew what those terms really meant. And so you lay them out very clearly in your videos. And I really like that. And then the glossary, again, you go through a lot of terms that people just toss around all the time. Like your defensive glossary was like super useful.
Oh, thank you.
So I really like the work that you do. And you do a lot of like breaking down, like, here's how, you know, Yusuf Nurkic, what he means to the Portland Trailblazers. Or but my question is, when you are approaching, like getting ready to make a video or write an article about a team or a player, with so much data out there, so much to take in, what advice do you have for someone to how to approach analysis when you're just, you know, when you're a beginner, when you're not someone who's seasoned in this and hasn't done this for a really long time?
It's definitely hard. You're right, because there's so much data out there. It's hard to figure out what's signal and what's noise. And in fact, obviously there are whole teams of people and there are conferences held so that for, you know, mathematicians and analytics folks to go to in order to try to figure out what is signal and what is noise in the data. And of course they don't always agree. And so that's sort of the problem. So that's why I think is why it's fun to look into it and it's fun to watch. And it's fun to use that data, but it's also pliable and it could be used and it could also be, you know, you could use it one of two ways or somebody could come at you with an argument against you using different data. So I use it as a jumping off point to look for, indicators that something might be happening. So let's say I am trying to look at, and I try to keep it simple from that perspective, because personally I think that the I don't know how to model anything. I'm not a mathematician, so I stay away from using that to make any broad assessments. I typically think that it's easier to go from a team that you're watching, take a question,
okay,
look at the right analytics for that question, and then watch video from there. Now, that's also the process about how I scout and create videos, and that's pretty in-depth. So you could do one or two of those things. So, for example, if I wanted to know, or when I wanted to know things for the Nurkic video, I thought he certainly seemed to be passing really well for this team. And I didn't watch a lot of Nurkic in Denver. Let's take a look and see how much better he is at passing, or if he is better at passing at all. I don't know. So then I just hopped onto basketballreference.com, scrolled down, went to the advanced section, and looked at his assist percentage, which, you know, by definition is the estimate of a percentage of teammate field goals a player assisted on while he was on the floor. So you can say he assisted on, you know, if you assist on 50% of them, that's half field goals. It's crazy. So I looked at it, and then I just calculated it and looked at it as a simple trend. Okay, here's what it was last year. Here's what it is this year. Here's what it was this year in Denver versus here's what it is this year in Portland. And I was just looking at one single statistic, because the percentage, usually the advanced ones are the ones I like the most, because they tell me about don't look at totals. Nobody cares. I mean, it's interesting from a perspective of, oh, he is a 20-point-per-game scorer. That's fine. That doesn't tell you if he's a good scorer or not. It tells you he's scoring 20 points a game.
Interesting. Okay. You look at how he's getting those points?
I look at how he's getting those points with the... Typically, I like to look at per 100 possession statistics.
Okay.
That's just... That takes... That sort of helps you figure out the difference between scoring in a game and pace. So, because obviously, if you're scoring 30 points a game, but your team runs 150 possessions a game, which would be insane, that would be like, okay, well, of course you're scoring 30 points a game. Like, your team... Your team is like the 7 second or less Suns. Like, you score all the time. Mm-hmm. Of course you have 30 points a game. So you can take pace out of that and figure out what's your average amount of points per 100 possessions and then figure out, okay, well, you're actually this amount of score. Typically teams or people go up in scoring. But so I typically look at the per 100 possession statistics for your basic stat totals. So like assists, steals, blocks, turnovers, personal fouls and points, rebounds. Then I look at to figure out whether how they're being efficient or not. Then I look at the advanced statistics. So, you know, their rebounding percentage, their turnover percentage, their usage rate, those types of things. So that's typically my process. I use those as markers. And then to get more advanced, if you wanted to, you could watch video of those things. So like you can go on to NBA.com and like use some filters and like watch all of the players' field goals from a certain game or from a certain area of the floor. And then you can just, you know, they're 15 seconds long.
Yeah. And that's when you really go down a rabbit hole.
Well, you know, and like Nurkic only had 37 made field goals when I did that video for the Blazers. Okay. So it wasn't that hard to watch 37 clips at 15 seconds apiece and figure out where he's shooting, where he's bad at shooting by just both my eyes. So that's a whole other thing. If you wanted to see how a player is doing, go on to basketballreference.com, look at the per 100 possession statistics, look at the advanced statistics. There's all kinds of details on there. That there's a glossary, so it tells you what they are and how they're interpreted and how they're created and stuff.
Do you,
if you wanted to, you could check out some advanced analytics blogs, but that may be a little in depth.
Well, do you compare them to other like players in the league? Because that's one of the things that I always want to do is like people will come at me with like, well, you know, he's doing, you know, this at 20%, and I'm like, okay, so if he's doing it at 20%, like, what are two other players in the league who are, you know, in the same position doing? I mean, do you ever do that kind of a comparison, too?
Sure. When I did that for, I had that a little bit at the end of that Nurkic video, is that I talked about him versus Plumlee, specifically to say that it's possible that he continues this trend or gets even better, because it's not like Plumlee was a great passer when he came to Portland. Here's what his, you know, percentage, because things like assist percentage doesn't change based off the minutes that you play. It's based off of the minutes that you're on the floor. Mm-hmm. So unless you're a complete garbage time, therefore, you know, like Pat Connaughton's advanced statistics don't really mean that much because you're always playing in the last minute of a game. It doesn't really matter. But if you're playing some, you know, some modicum of minutes like Mason Plumlee during his time in Brooklyn, you can say, okay, well, this is generally sort of the player that he was. Let's take a look at it. And so you say, okay, his 8%, you know, assist percentage makes sense. Mm-hmm. So versus when he left, it was 24%. You're like, oh, holy crap. That's like, he's way better. He's way better. So then I could use that to look at it and compare that to Nurkic. Now, I don't really do a lot of direct argumentation of like where you're talking about. If you would compare the players, that'd be sort of people argue who's better at whatever. I don't really do a lot of that, but you could try to use that. That gets a little messy. And again, like, I feel like a lot of people knock on analytics folks for this. Analytics folks don't do this. Kids who are writers who then use analytics and who are new at it do this. And that's, they use analytics as a means to say, oh, actually, Jokic is better than DeAndre Jordan. It's like, well, okay, what about team context? I mean, right. What about the fact that DeAndre Jordan plays with Chris Paul? What about all these other things? You know, it's like, come on, give me a break. Just, oh, he has a better block percentage. Who cares? You know, it's like...
Well, like you say, though, context is really important, and there's so many variables that it's... And mm-hmm. with so much data available, it's really hard to know where to stop.
Right. Which is why I typically just go after one player and try to educate myself about a theme of that player. Like, I did an Evan Turner video early in the season, and basically it was like, you know, that video was all about minutia. It was talking about he is dribble when he takes a step inside the free throw line to shoot his shot, he's like 15% worse at making a shot. It's terrible. He should dribble to the free throw line and shoot it, or to the elbow and shoot it. every time. He shouldn't ever go below the free throw line because he's not good at drawing fouls. He's not a good finisher, and he's not good when he shoots a jumper at 8 feet, but he's better when he shoots it at 11 feet, you know? So it's like, but in order to get that, I had to watch every single Evan Turner mid-range possession. I couldn't get that from the stats because those 8 to 11 feet is in the same grouping of statistics on Basketball Reference or anywhere else. It's not cut up by, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 feet. It's cut up by ranges. You know, it's a 5 foot range. So you have to watch them.
So my final question about this is how do you we talked sort of like how you evaluate individual players. Do you have a different approach when you're looking at how a team is doing? Like, for instance, last year, Joe and I started covering and taking keeping track of how the team was doing with the four factors. So is that a useful, do you find that as a useful way to, you know, track how a team is doing? Or do you have other ways that you, you know, suggest people look at if they're trying to evaluate, you know, what the team's performance is, if they're, you know, growing or if they're stuck or if they're regressing? What are some ways you look at that?
Well, four factors, obviously, you know, basketball Bible stuff at this point in time. So hard to get away from that. I think the hardest thing about analyzing a team, especially if you're not somebody who watches that team with any regularity, is finding those nuances. So it, like this season with the Blazers, I think it would definitely be possible to take a look at Portland, look at their team statistics, look at their four factors, then just go through their, like, scroll through their roster page and look and see if those, what, like, their percentages are and say, oh, Alperen Kaminu is shooting 4% worse on threes this year. That's probably really important because, like, he takes a lot of them, and he's like, he takes the fourth most threes on the team, and he's a starting power forward, and he plays a pivotal role. Now, would you know from just looking at that and not watching the team how crushing that is for some of the possessions in which he doesn't take a three, which he then dribbles the basketball in because he's afraid to take a three?
You learn a lot from watching Aminu dribble.
Right. And then the Blazers have essentially a waste of possession. Like, they have, you know, he puts up a shot that doesn't go in when he's closer, or turns it over, or it's a steal or something, right? No, you're not going to know that from the statistics. You can see maybe that he's a bad three-point shooter, but you're not going to know unless you watch the team or listen to somebody like me from that team say this is what happens when that happens. So I think it's hard to make those things, and it's even hard to scout those things on video, I think, for a whole team. It's easier to scout a player. Now, if you had an idea, let's say you were a guy like me and you were doing a team that you want to do something on a team that you didn't really watch all that much.
Okay.
Typically what you would do, I think, how I would attack it would be just that. You would look at everything and you'd say, okay, you have to know a little bit about the team. Like, you have to know that the three-point shot is, I mean, it's critical for every team in the NBA now, but it's like the Blazers would be the worst team in the NBA if they couldn't shoot the basketball at all. You know, like they it's absolutely integral to their offense. So knowing that, you could go take a look and say, okay, there's a dip here, there's a dip here. That's really a huge issue. So then I would chase the rabbit hole down Aminu. And then my video wouldn't be about, here's why the Blazers are doing bad. It would be asking the question, is Aminu's three-point shooting hurting the Blazers? Or how much is Aminu's three-point shooting hurting the Blazers this season? Okay. And that's what the video would be about. And that's what my analysis would be about. So, and I try not to come to before, especially, you know, I can't tell you how many times that I've, mostly when I watch video, that it comes back to me that, oh, something else comes up. I see something else happening on those possessions. Like, oh, like, so for example, what I did something on, I forget what it was, but essentially I came to a revelation that, like, part of Mason Plumlee's issues on defense was that he was running into CJ and Damian when they were, when a dribbler would snake the pick, which means dribbling one direction, then switching back and coming the other direction back towards the big man who's playing low. Plumlee would try to step in and, like, stop him with a little jab. He'd reach out real quick to try to, like, you know, swat at the ball and, like, have the dribbler slow down.
Yeah.
But that's right when he would time it poorly, and that's right when Damian or CJ would try to be jutting back across to recover on the snake. So he'd basically get in their way. He'd screen his own man.
Okay. So it in some cases, it wasn't so much that they were doing a poor job, the guards were doing a poor job of defending. Right. It was like they were trying to get to their place, but Mason Plumlee was already there.
Exactly. So not that Damian and CJ are, so the, you know, part of that video was like, it's not that I'm saying Damian and CJ are good pick and roll defenders, but part of it has to do with their teammates because, I mean, defense is, and that is the funny part of analytics in the NBA is that it's incredibly hard for most analytics folks have not found a way yet to separate team defense from individual defensive statistics or individual defensive play. It's really funny. So obviously Mason Plumlee is a huge part of that. So yeah. So like a lot of times you end up a lot when you watch video, you're like, oh, here's another pattern that I found. That's actually maybe the video should be about that. Or maybe that's half of the video or like half the reason or 10% of the reason why these guys are bad at defense is because of this or something.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that even people who are very experienced in this find themselves traveling down other paths as they're trying to analyze one thing, other things come up that bear looking at. So those of us who are just beginners at it are not alone. We're not the only ones who get distracted or find out other things in the course of trying to discover something else.
Yeah, and if you wanted to know something, if you were just a real if you were a casual fan, but you wanted to start knowing a little bit more, I would start off with something you're interested in. So during the game, try to, you don't have to write it down, but just try to log it in your brain. Like, okay, count how many times Damian goes left off the high pick and roll and right, mm-hmm. and then see what he does. So you just go, oh, left made three, right drive, right foul. Left foul, like, and try to log that out. And then you can maybe use that information. Oh, huh. I've counted for three games. He goes left more often to shoot a three and right more often to draw a foul. Or I don't know. I'm mm-hmm. just making that up.
Right.
But then you can jump into his advanced statistics and take a look at it and maybe be like, oh, okay, this is his free throw rate. Interesting. Okay. This is his three pointers. Then you can just watch all the times he was fouled and watch all the times he shot a three pointer. Maybe you get a little more out of it. So, but you can start by just saying, finding something you're interested in and just sort of making a note of it during the game.
Yeah, that sounds like great advice. Find something that you're interested in, make a note of it, see if you see a pattern, see if that pattern leads you to any questions. And then once you've got a question, then you can dive in and see what you can do about answering it. Pretty simplified version of it, but sounds good. Well, I'm going to go to, let's see, who are we playing tonight? They're playing the Timberwolves tonight. Holy Moses, that's going to be an exciting game, I'm hoping. It's another really long team, which was what Milwaukee was. Man, those guys are long. And Minnesota has another people with long arms and long legs and limbs just sticking out everywhere. So I think I'll try to figure out what one thing I'm going to watch for because I like that advice. Dane, thank you so much for chatting with me today. I really appreciate it. I learned a lot. And what can you tell folks again where to find all of your different types of content?
Yeah, you can find me over at NBC Sports. That's Pro Basketball Talk, NBCSports.com/NBA. You can find me on YouTube. That's YouTube.com/Dane, D-A-N-E, not Dan. And, of course, on Twitter, at Dane Carbaugh, C-A-R-B-A-U-G-H.
And you can find the Blazers Edge podcast on Stitcher or iTunes, or just hop on over to blazersedge.com, which also I know sometimes we post your Blazer-related videos over there. Finally, go Blazers.